everyone. Welcome to an episode of Bitches on Comics. I think that this is actually only our third episode in the year of 2024, which is really amazing, I guess. We've been doing stuff. And I hope you're enjoying the flashback files. Every other week, we're still posting all of the mountain of Patreon episodes that we have out. And we're planning on coming back, I don't know, sometime later this year, maybe in 2025. Who knows? Meanwhile, we have this extraordinary special episode because my two guests today reached out, and who can say no, you know? Like, this is something that we had to do. So I'm very thrilled to be here, and I would like for you to introduce yourselves, please. So if you wouldn't mind going first, Sarah.
Oh, I would love to. My name is Sarah Gailey. I am an author of genre fiction across lengths, forms, and genres. And I have the enormous honor of having gotten to collaborate on multiple projects with, I think, easily the greatest artist to work in comics ever, Liana Kangas. And that's kind of the main thing you need to know about me is that I got to work with Liana. And everything else about me, my career, my personal life, my soul is kind of secondary to that.
Oh, I love being your life goal. This is so great for me. What a staple to put on my tombstone. Hi, everyone. I am Liana Kangas. I'm an illustrator, comic artist, sequential, poster design, design in general, but mostly work on projects like Your Station and True Cults, as well as IPs like RG Comics, Star Trek, Star Wars, and... Yeah, I too got the immense pleasure of collaborating with Gailey not once, but twice, plus who knows however many times in our long-running careers that knows no bounds.
I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Sarah Sintry, the host of this show. But that's okay. Mostly people know me, I think, that come to this show, perhaps. Who knows? Anyway, well, today what I wanted to talk to you mostly about was Know Your Station. I am actually surprised to hear that there have been other projects because I did not know about them. I would love to hear more about that. But Know Your Station was the one that I read again this morning. So I think that this is a great one to talk about. This comic came out in 2023. Is that right?
Correct.
Yes.
My timing is good.
2023. Yeah. We had to think for a second. I'm like,
For a hot second there, I was like, oh, I sure don't know when I am.
Yeah. Didn't you say earlier time is a flat circle?
Yeah, the 2020, it feels like, yeah, we never left 2020 pretty much. But for many reasons, who needs to name all of them?
Yeah, I'm definitely still like 30. Like, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding? And will be for at least the next 8 years.
Yeah. Staying young forever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like the only person I know who's like so thrilled to be getting older all of the time. And it's just like cracks me up to be like, yes, I've been waiting to be a crone my entire life. This is the best thing that could happen to me.
We all want to be a Baba Yaga in the woods. You know what I mean? Like... I can't wait till my gray is prominent.
Yes.
It's like death becomes her. We have to like, you know, we wait till the certain amount and then you like stay that age forever. Your skin might be sloughing off, but like at least we're still alive. Soul.
Honestly, it does that already.
Yes. So how did this team assemble? I wanted to know because everything about Know Your Station, I feel like the flow between everybody who works on that book is so solid. So I'd love to hear, you know, what was the idea? Like, how did this all come together?
So I put together the concept with my amazing editor, Elizabeth Bry. And we were talking about artists to work with because at the time, I didn't have nearly as much knowledge of even like what art would serve my script best as Elizabeth did. And I basically turned to her and said, like, please tell me your thoughts on this, because that's my favorite thing to do in any collaboration is find out who is the smartest person in the room and say, you get to make all the decisions. And Elizabeth immediately said, Liana, I mean, and did a very sweet thing of pretending to let me decide. said, you know, here's some options, and then kind of pointed at Liana and was like, and here's the option. And it was, I mean, an incredible collaboration right from our first meeting. We got on a Zoom call to make sure that we would align and that we would work well together. I really managed to like fumble some important questions, and Liana was gracious enough to let me try and try again to ask questions like, how do you feel about making drugs horny? But trying to ask that in a professional way that would respect this person who I wanted to collaborate with and their potential boundaries.
Yeah. In what way can I not be fired from this if HR was listening to this question? I have a lot of respect for anyone that has to have those types of discussions all the time.
Trying so hard to emphasize what matters to me is your boundaries and safety in your working environment. That is of the utmost importance. I respect you so much as a professional. This book needs to have some vibes, though. So how do you feel about certain kinds of perhaps, and bless you, Liana, for very patiently waiting while I fumbled my way through that.
I think I didn't even know what you were going to ask. Like, that was the last thing on my mind, that you'd be like, how do you feel about drawing horny drug? And then I think there was a word fruit was involved or food or something. And I was like, huh? Like, I don't think I was smart enough to understand what was happening. It's like, I thought I was in a fever dream. But we immediately clicked, and it worked out great. Elizabeth truly is, like, amazing.
Oh, Elizabeth is incredible to work with, and putting us together was one of the greatest gifts that she's ever given me. And, I mean, that conversation after we got through the awkward part where I was trying to make sure that we would be on the same page with boundaries. Liana immediately had a million brilliant ideas for character and costume design, world building, set building, and we just launched.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually, Liana, I know your work from Archie Comics, because I am a huge, huge Archie mega fan. I'm always having Jamie Rotante on this podcast and others every time I get the chance.
I think I listened to those episodes. Love that.
Yes. I mean, literally one of the most quotable people I've ever met, honestly. Like, she'll just say stuff and I'm like, soundbite.
Incredible.
Yeah. So I was curious, was this your first foray into this kind of more kind of bonkers sci-fi stuff? Was this your first space station?
That's a good question. I think it was more, I mean, it was definitely my first long-term hard sci-fi book, for sure. Because like, I had previously worked on She Said Destroy, which was a major mix of like fantasy and sci-fi, fantasy, I think. But I've done a lot of sci-fi anthology work, and I had been wanting to work on a sci-fi series for so long that when I got it, I think it was on my birthday, I got the email from Elizabeth, and I was like, this is the best birthday present of all time. Like, this is exactly what I wanted. For so long. And, you know, because like growing up, most of the media I ingested or like video games I played were 99% sci-fi, you know, like Mass Effect, Halo, all that stuff. And you know, even I think a lot of the books I read too. So it piqued my interest. And the fact that, you know, Gailey allowed me to contribute to a lot of the story felt very, it felt very like homely from the beginning, like just immediately was able to get along so well and like work so well with Gailey. They're like an incredible communicator. And, it still shocks me to this day how easy it was. So like I traveled out of country while I was working on the book. And I mean, still, it's wild to think about now.
Yeah, that was a wild time in both of our lives. And I feel so lucky that you are the person I was collaborating with during that, because I could send Liana a message saying, hey, just so you know, these 9 terrible things happened today, so I'm going to be getting you that revision a couple hours late. And Liana would be like, well, 10 terrible things happened to me today, so actually, can you make it 2 hours late?
It was so great. Like, I hate that, I hate using the word trauma bonding, but truly, we both were like going through so much life stuff at the same time that it was not nice to be able to relate and talk to each other, but I definitely felt like we put a lot of ourselves in the book. And that's how, you know, important it made it. And it was great because, like, you know, not a lot of collaborators get direct access to each other. So I feel really lucky.
Oh yeah. This was one of the like emails that I need to like print out and tape into my diary, is the email where I contacted Liana and was like, hey, I would love to be able to communicate with you directly about how you feel about the scripts. And like what I always try to do this when I collaborate is to ask like what format works best for you, because I know often artists have to reformat scripts so that they can fit into their workflow. And I was like, I can work in any format. So, you know, I want to know that, but I also really wanted to be able to ask like, hey, what do you love to draw? What do you hate to draw? Like what excites you about this script? What are you having fun with? And the response where Liana was like, yeah, sure, we can chat, was such a turning point in my life, because that is when like I started walking down the path of getting to meet one of the people who is now one of my closest friends.
Oh, wow.
This is so heartwarming. I was going to say that because this is a sci-fi story where it's okay. So we've got a murder mystery. It's a sci-fi murder mystery in a space station, but neither really the space station nor the murder mystery are really the point, I guess. It's kind of, not to say that it's peripheral, because it's definitely what's driving the plot, but so much of it is about the character journey, I guess. And so, and of course, that's not totally new to sci-fi, but I found it very, very true in this book. And then I was also thinking that it does lean into the things that I think that both of you do really well, which is character-driven stuff, right? So the interactions between the characters, the body language that's just so visual, and everybody seems like, you know, it's just their body language is the same of like my friend group or something like that. And then you also have them kind of talking to each other and relating to each other in that same way. So the character-driven thing, I think, ended up being really by far kind of the most important part of the book. Would you all agree with that?
Absolutely. That's such an honor that like you looked at it in such a relatable way. Because like, even though it's set in the future, right? Like I would hope that a lot of our communication and interactions would stay kind of similar in the future. Like, obviously, our different points of view now are shifting, like, the newer generations, you know, interact so differently than from us growing up, because they're, like, under a lot more scrutiny, like, more internet, more, like, coverage, more live footage, all that stuff. And then, you know, everything. So it was interesting to play on like the acting, especially with the incredible conversations that Gailey would come up with, like to build these long-term backstories of people in such a short amount of issues was so unreal. And like I felt like each one was like wrapped up with a little bow, and I really loved how, you know, for me, sci-fi and like dystopic future stuff is always about like found family and taking care of each other and taking care of community. And like, that's such a huge thing that Gailey believes in as well. So it just felt like we're on the same page without having to even discuss it, which felt really nice.
Yeah, it was incredible to see Liana's work with gesture and acting and movement. There's this panel that I can picture so clearly in my mind so easily. And it's the panel where Elise is telling Marin, I'm clean, and is making this face that is like so miserable and distraught. And I can still remember the first time I saw that panel and I burst out laughing. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly how I say these things to my friend. I recently got into a relationship. And I literally remember getting on camera with Liana and being like, I think I'm in love, and making that exact same face, just like, ugh.
Oh, gosh. I was like, you don't say.
It's only real if you communicate it with that level of absolute woe.
Mm-hmm. I've gone and done it again.
One interesting thing about the art, and I wanted to know, I guess, if this was intentional. So a lot of the gory parts that we see to begin with, there's a lot of gore in this book, which is like awesome. I'm a huge horror fan, so I'm the audience for it. But every murder victim has something really horrible done, but very artistic. This is a subplot maybe we'll talk about later, but it's these just beautiful body horror, but it's also kind of done in hologram form. So you're not actually seeing it. You're seeing kind of this representation of it, I guess. So I was like, oh, okay. I wonder if that's like kind of a sidestepping way to get out of, you know, like, oh, we're not doing this like visceral body horror, LOL. But then later there's a guy with his lungs outside of his body. So I was like, nope.
Oh my God.
I was like, is this a trick to keep it like younger rated or something? And then it was just like, nope, it's not. But it was interesting. It kind of led, there was a buildup for me because of that, I think. So I found it to be pretty, one of the inventive things. There's a lot of inventive stuff in this book, but I found that to be a very inventive thing as a reader, going through and being like, okay, these people are dying, but it is there is a separation because it's in these really inventive color schemes, and it doesn't look exactly real, right? And then all of a sudden it's just like, no, it's real. It's very real. Here's this very, very dead person.
No, I can actually tell you what we did to protect the rating. Because we live in the United States, we got to do something that it honestly was kind of a career goal for me anyway, which is to enhance gore in order to cover implied sex and like nudity. Mm-hmm. So there's one panel that Liana drew so gorgeously that I am obsessed with. I remember us like going back and forth on it a bunch of times and just being like, what if we add this? That is of a couple who are hanging. Yeah. From this like thing on the ceiling above their bed, and they're naked. And we were like talking with the publisher, who was extremely supportive and communicative, and who we had agreed with about the rating goals for this, because we talked ahead of time about like how mature do we want the rating to be, and what do we do to meet a lower rating so we can distribute to a broader audience. So to be clear, this was not censorship. This was like, we were all on the same page about this, but we were like, okay, mm-hmm. So for this rating, can we show genitals in this panel? And the publisher was like, it's probably better if we don't. And we workshopped some solutions, and the solution we came up with was to have a hanging strip of flesh from a flensed person's body kind of covering their crotch. So like they had been peeled like a banana sort of, and mm-hmm. part of the peel was keeping them modest.
Yeah. Oh my God. We have like the weirdest country that we live in, where it's just like, okay, but that's okay. But if yeah, you saw yeah. genitals, this is not safe for kids at that point. But no, that's hilarious. Thank you so much for telling me a little bit more about that. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that came to be, if you have anything further to add, Liana.
Being worried about my internet search history for reference is definitely worth a thing. Googling how to flay open skin body is very, you know, probably pinged. I got to be on some lists at this point, I'm sure. But you know, like, what internal organs are nearest to this entry point? So that way I draw those first, spilling out of a body. Or like, how does a lung come outside of your body? Do you have to pull, you know, like the most insane like stuff. But I think the majority of the gore, this was like the most gory I've ever done. And I only continue to grow from here. But it was something that I've always wanted to do, because like I'm a huge horror fan as well. Like I film, you know, comics books, everything, and not getting to find a collaborator to do that in a sense that's as dark and maybe like, you know, body horror, like different subsections of horror are so interesting to kind of compile. And this one specifically doing like, geez, body horror and, you know, there's like thriller aspects. And then, you know, there's like the whole, I wouldn't even know what to call like some of the Hannibal level stuff. Like it just getting to kind of explore that in different media. Like I originally asked Gailey, like, hey, I'm about to do this one murder scene. Like, what would you suggest I watch or like in the background or anything like that? And so that's kind of how we ended up starting to talk all the time, was me asking for like, you know, playlists or, you know, movies and stuff like that. And then finding out like, oh, we watch all the same stuff. That's great. I love this for both of us. And so I think, you know, or I'd be like, I really want to do this. And even one of the, I think one of the panels where somebody's like vacuum sealed, I like literally used a vacuum sealer and toy model to like actually vacuum seal the toy model.
I remember this because I remember you were like, great news. Someone in your life, maybe it was a friend of yours or, but you were like, someone in your life, you're like, great news. They got a sous vide. And I was like, why is that great news? And you were like, because it came with a vacuum sealer. And I did this, and this sent me a picture of like a Ken doll vacuum sealed in plastic wrap.
I was like, I think I might send this to you like when I finish the book.
I didn't immediately put together that it was for reference. I had not had any caffeine yet that morning or whatever. And so I was like, good job, dude. Why are we doing this? Yeah. And you were like, for the book we're working on.
You're like, I have signed up to be friends with somebody who is actually insane. And it wasn't even just the doll. Like I found like, you know, the car goop to like clean up like dust in your car and stuff. I ripped out some of that and put it in the bag to vacuum seal to look like guts and, you know, just totally normal things that people do.
That's dedication to craft is what that is.
What a story. All right. So have you sent it to Gailey yet? Is it still in your house?
Oh, not yet. This... Special occasion. I don't know. I gotta figure out, like, you know, when they least expect it, right?
Uh-huh.
Just randomly appear on your doorstep.
Baby shower someday. Maybe.
Incredible.
On my deathbed.
That I would like... show up on your, you know, on your doorstep with box in hand.
My deathbed, I'll be like, Liana, come closer. And you'll be like, what? And I'll be like, come closer. And you'll be like, what? And I'll be like, where's the little vacuum sealed doll?
You promised me.
You know what? Put it in my coffin with me. I want to be buried with that little dude.
I'm so glad that we have like actual proof that you want that. So that way, if anybody questions me, I can just replay the talk.
I'm cracking up too because I'm like, oh no, it will last so much longer than your body will. This like freeze, people will like in future will be like, we found this coffin. It just had this in it.
Yeah, they'll unearth my sarcophagus and there will be like a framed photo of Liana and a little Ken doll sealed into a vacuum sealed bag. And they'll be like, ah, this is what they worshipped back then.
I love that you added the photo of me with it. You're taking that with you to your grave.
Oh, that was already in my will.
Incredible.
And I'm weeping. All right. For some reason, I was also just like, oh, wow, Clive Barker had to do all of that body horror without Google. Just cracking up.
Gosh.
That was all from his brain and maybe like a anatomy textbook.
The imagination knows no bounds, truly.
Truly. So I was going to ask too, because the coloring and the lettering both play huge roles in this book as well. And so I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. This coloring is gorgeous. I don't know how like the color palettes were chosen, but I think it fits perfectly. It's not the immediate choice, I guess. When we think about like a space station, I personally think about what else but the Starship Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And it's like the color schemes of that, so, so different. The color schemes of sci-fi in general. So I thought that the schemes here were very interesting. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that if you all happen to have any input or anything to say about it. And the warping lettering that kind of shows like the effects of being in space or being on drugs and how like the lettering kind of like will do like a wavy thing. Both of those I thought were really cool. So
yeah. So Rebecca Nalty, incredible human being.
Love working with them.
Yeah. In Dublin, I think. Such a cool person. Actually collaborated with me on She Said Destroy for Vault prior. And so I think when Elizabeth told us that Rebecca was on board, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. and I think like, Gailey, I think that you both were planning on like bright neon colors to begin with, right? Because like it deals with all the drug stuff and also rich, like rich people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really loved the idea of, and Liana and I feel like this feels in my memory like such a collaborative and like co-created idea between us, but just using color story to tell a class story on the space station was so important immediately. And it was like, okay, so what are the wealthiest people in the universe going to use color to say to each other about themselves? And then how are they going to use color to make sure that there's a stark line between them and the people who work for them? And the difference between like neons, like very saturated colors and duller colors was a huge part of that.
Yeah, like regal, like very, what's it called? Gemstone looking like pigments, and then versus essentially, which is terrible, what you would see like, I mean, you and I just discussed like what you see in working class jobs or what you would see like peasants wearing back in the day, or, and you know, mixing all these like ideas and cultures and everything, and realizing like, oh, well, the difference is everybody that's rich is going to have these like vibrant, insane, expensive colors because we're no longer on Earth. We can no longer access that stuff. And then everyone that is working for us is going to be in nice-ish clothes because they're working for us, but it's going to be the blandest thing because no one can look better than us. And so I think with the industry level, like fabric we talked about, like it was going to be like a tech copywritten fabric. And like, it was a very specific, like, I don't even remember.
Fabric that belongs to the company and that says, in no matter what you do to your clothes, they'll still say you work for us.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think in the early stages before we were like, wow, that's a lot of work. It was like I put the icon of the company, like repeating pattern over it in like a really sheen, weird, like kind of highlighted color. Mm-hmm. But then we realized like, oh, that would be so much work. So like, you know, we just zoom it back a little bit and it's kind of like this grayish, lavender tinted kind of vibe. But when you zoom in, the fabric has like the logo. I don't know how small it is, but you know,
it's kind of, you know, with that color, I feel like where we landed was almost on like a lavender version of Baker Miller pink. It's like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a mild tone that it makes you feel like your teeth are on edge to look at it because you're like, there's color here, but there's no color.
Mm-hmm. And you did, I think you did bring up that Baker Miller pink and I was like, what is that? So you haven't, you like sent me all this in, like, I had no idea the lore and like background of that. I learned a lot during this book. It was so fun. Yeah. There's a lot of like very in-depth thinking to a lot of what we did.
Yeah, the lettering too, right? Because there's this like very warped feel that kind of, when the lettering kind of starts to do this like warp effect that's kind of conveys, you know, either stress or the fact that somebody is on drugs or, you know, whatever it happens to be. But I found that to be really fun whenever I was reading along, too, was just watching the letters be letters still, but then be kind of like, we're doing a little lean thing. And I thought that was really brilliant.
That was so much fun. And this is something that, I mean, I do more and more intentionally in my script is asking the letterer questions, because of course a comic script is not the final document. It's a conversation between the team, and it's sort of like the script is sort of like the process document that we're all going to work with. And so I'll ask questions like, you know, lettering note, is this thing possible that I'm picturing in my mind? Is there a way to do it? And I get to have the coolest conversations with letterers. And the letters for this book had so much of that. There was so much like, hey, can we do something wild with St. Bridget's lettering? Can we make the letters seem like they're warping on the page? Can we do something like in the background of this panel with letters? And I'm always 100% of the time amazed at what letters are capable of pulling off.
Oh, yeah.
Cardinal.
Oh, my God.
And so killer with this.
When you look for it, right? Like, whenever you're reading a comic and you're just like, anything from like the 80s, the sound effects are so much a part of the art that it just, we do less sound effects these days. But I'm like, bring them back. You're so great.
I will bang pots and pans together all day, every day about the value of hand lettering and how letterers need to be paid 8 times what they're being paid so that they can take the time to do stuff like those sound effects in the 80s and the way that they would like follow lines of movement. And that is something that Cardinal Ray, the letterer who we worked with on Know Your Station, is so good at, is building letters into panels as part of the art instead of as this thing that has to hold itself out separate. I love working with them.
They're so good.
What a team.
Yeah.
This whole team was great. That was part of what, whenever I was reading it, I was just like, what is this dream team just working in tandem with each other? Obviously, there's, you know, comics are rife with incredible creative teams pulling off amazing things. But yeah, I was like, ooh, I'm glad I don't have to imagine what it would be like to read like any other person. Like, I love this specific team and how like everybody worked together. That's like such a part of what's so great about this book, I think.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Bitches on Comics is coming back on Wednesday, September 4th, 2024, to celebrate our 5th anniversary.
Join us for a retrospective as we remember the best of the best of BOC. I mean, we are the light of your ears, after all. We'll be revisiting 5 years of interviews, stories, jokes, and the thing we all love the most, comics. Not to mention all the other gay shit.
From Carmen Maria Machado to Stephanie Williams to Rachel Pollack, we've talked to some of the coolest LGBTQ+ folks and women in comics, and we're proud to celebrate that with you, our dear listeners.
On our anniversary, we also mark the beginning of our official new season. Can you believe it? I can believe it. It's about damn time. And you can tune in bi-weekly on Wednesdays for brand spanking new episodes with more of the coolest people in comics.
That's right, bitches. You heard right. We are back for a new season, and we are so, so, so excited that you're coming along with us.
And then every other Wednesday from there, make sure to come on back and hear some brand spanking new interviews, conversations about comics that we love, comics that we missed, comics that you missed, comics that we all just need to just shove into our brains as quickly as possible. We love y'all. We'll see you soon.
The Big Silly Sword, right?
Yes.
There's an the anime big silly sword.
The definitely so, not Cloud's Buster Sword, quote unquote.
Yeah, I was like, wow, somehow you worked an anime sword into this. So I would love to hear, was this a dream of yours? Did you both just love anime swords that much and want to put one in? Because it is... I will note it is very plot relevant, perhaps in ways that we should not disclose for anybody who was worried about spoilers. But I will note that it's there for a reason, because whenever it first showed up, I was like, what is this? And then I was delighted, but I thought it was just a gag. And then later it finds out, oh, no, not just a gag. It's a whole thing. But yeah, I'd love to hear more about the big silly anime sword.
Oh my gosh. I mean, in writing the inclusion of the sword, there absolutely was a gag. And something that I try to challenge myself to do as often as possible as a writer is to make my gags actually plot relevant, which sometimes I pull off and sometimes I don't. but with this one, I was like, okay, I think this would be funny. But also I wanted to find a way to mention in this book the way that wealthy people think they have to protect themselves and have no idea what self-protection actually looks like. Because ultimately, self-protection comes from healthy, thriving, supportive community. But often, very wealthy people think that it means consolidation of resources and weapons. And I was like, mm-hmm. How are you going to do that on a space station? You can't hoard guns on a space station. There's no guns up here. So what are we going to do? And I was like, oh, she would absolutely just go and find a big sword and be like, well, now I have this so nobody can hurt me. I'm safe. And then, of course, I got to work in a reference to one of my favorite memes, which is the What Do You Got There? Smoothie, which was
the iCarly, like, yes. Fridge bit. It's so uh-huh. Fucking good.
And then
a laugh out loud moment, definitely.
Handed that script off to Liana, and the resulting sword was stunning.
I think when you sent me the script and I read the smoothie bit, I literally like was like crying, texting you, being like, this is my career defining moment is literally just this entire page bit, which is a 6-panel page like landscape of Elise and this other worker on the ship and Manda literally like swinging this fucking sword around, not like caring about it like getting in the way or like people having to dodge it in the elevator and like how heinously like, I mean, she like Manda is like the definition of like weeb, but like in a I have so much money sense. And so that's yes. Why like when you see the outcome of Manda at the end, I'm like, when we were in her quarters, I was like, I'm reading the script of all the things I could draw. And I was like, Gailey, you genius.
That ended up being something that really came out of the collaboration between Liana and I. And I said this before, and I'll never stop saying it, that I started writing the scripts with the goal of making Liana laugh. And one of the ways I did that was through lists of things that could go in the background of scenes, which on the one hand is awful of me because it's like adding a lot of art. But also I would say in there, like, you know, do whatever you want out of these 15 things. And then I would just sit there trying to come up with things that I thought might make Liana laugh. And it was the most fun part of this entire project.
The AI is named St. Bridget. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the AI comedy. And like, okay, so not only is St. Bridget perhaps the funniest character in, I don't know, sci-fi in general, it's hilarious, hilarious character. And I was laughing so much, and then I was like, isn't that funny, though, to kind of like be like, wait, so is AI laughing at us or with us? I had all of these moments of just like while I was reading being like, A, is AI better at comedy than me? You know, B, is it really funny for AI to like just look at humanity and be like, LOL, how many fingers do we have? Like, we're doing human things. How many fingers, you know, or I think about how good, what is it, that video that's just like it's old-timey music done with AI and the whole thing of, oh my God, my arms are fucking stuck like this or uh-huh. Whatever. And it's like, that's hilarious. That's so funny. And it's like, it's something where it's like, if somebody did a whole band and made this joke, it would not be as funny, right? Like the AI being like, LOL, this is the music you listen to is actually the funniest part about it. And so I was curious how to work all of that into a question. So AI, is AI funny, I guess, would probably be the thing. Because, you know, obviously, as creators, there's so many reasons for all of every person in this call to be like, AI, oh my God, what a stressful thing to think about. But this AI I thought was helpful, funny, a member of the team, helpful, actually really helpful in a weird way. And yeah, I don't know. I was thinking about that, I guess, and just like, is AI like funnier than people? Did they nail it?
I mean, I think, so going into writing St. Bridget, of course, she ended up being one of my favorite characters I've ever written. Love her so much. And I was like, all right, how do I make it so that I'm not seeming to say, hey, AI is good for, you know, the way that we are using it now, which of course is not, in fact, an artificial intelligence, but just like language learning models that are sort of parroting our words back to us. And the way I did that was by saying, okay, what if everyone who is an AI enthusiast is correct and AI is its own form of art and its own labor force and should be respected as such? All right, are you going to respect that as a labor force? Are you going to respect this as a person? Are you going to treat this AI as a human being with rights and needs and feelings and a sense of humor? And of course, the answer is no. That's because the argument itself is entirely facetious. But doing that allowed me to have St. Bridget act as a friend or maybe a frenemy sometimes and have her own sense of humor. And she absolutely thinks it's funny to do things like, here, I made this picture of you with a more efficient amount of fingers. Do you like it?
Oh, my gosh. I think the entire conversation now, especially with how intensely terrible the concept of AI and how it's being utilized and like literally limiting workforces now, laying off workforces, less, you know, jobs for working artists and things like that. It's almost like parallel in the fact that like, I feel like Gailey preemptively knew it was going to happen. And then like as the issues started coming out, you know, a lot of the AI discussions started and I kept looking at Gailey being like, oh my God, this is starting to stress me out a little bit. But you know, now as we've like kind of processed this over a year, it's kind of interesting that you brought it up that way because now it's like it's gotten so out of hand that you can't help but laugh at how absolutely absurd everything is now in terms of AI, in terms of stealing from artists, in terms of literally like utilizing it instead of real human beings and things like that. But then exactly what Gailey said, which is you are not going to be respecting the tool that you not only created, but you're taking advantage of. And I'm a huge fan of like 90s anime where it's like Attack of All the Robots because you didn't respect them. And you treated them like shit, and now they have some virus, and now they're all killing everybody, right? Like, I am predisposed to think that a robot will kill me at any time. So, like, I thank my Siri and Alexa all the time, and, like, I appreciate them. And I try to, like, understand that while there could be, you know, as somebody who went to an engineering college, while there could be AI uses that can better help things like healthcare or, like, provide things, you know, that's not what it's being used for. Which is like, again, how we have to laugh off the absurdity of literally we could use this thing that people made for good. And yet, why is this random guy typing in some stuff to like make this like book to publish on TikTok, right? Like, it's just, how do you not laugh, right?
Yeah, because it's like, as you said, oh, but you could cure cancer, but I don't want to cure cancer. I want to turn people into dinosaurs. Yeah. And it's just like, that's 100% it is like, they're like, wow, look at this. This could like literally help save the rainforest. But you know what? Fuck artists. Let's fucking just like, fuck them.
Yeah.
And like, I could do art too.
What's even more wild about it, right, is we are reliving the Bitcoin situation where it's like Ethereum was taking up so much environmental resources and now people just forget about all that stuff happened. So my hope is that despite how horrific body horror is in this comic, people will read it and appreciate and respect that like, hey, if we're not careful, this is what it's going to be like. So maybe we don't do that.
Well, I think that much of the approach that we're talking about to the idea of AI is like people just yearning for a servant or slave class that they can exploit. It's people saying, wow, this is an artist that I don't have to pay or respect, that I can order to do what I want and then not treat as a human being and abandon. And I find that despicable on the level of like, why are we trying to replace human artists and not pay them? And I also find it despicable on a principle level of like, why do you want art from a source that you can dehumanize, demoralize, and discard? Like, what is the conversation you're trying to have with that art or with that healthcare provider or with that ecological analyst? Like, why is there this huge yearning to create a model in which we don't have to interact with someone who we treat well? And I find it real gross. And so, you know Your Station is very much about like, okay, so then what happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, people are like, don't be a Luddite or whatever. Luddites were awesome. So it's okay to be a Luddite, first of all. But it's like, at no point are we actually in this conversation criticizing AI, right? Like this entire thing is like what people are doing with AI is actually the problem. And that's so much in Know Your Station is like, well, the AI is fine, actually. But like, ultimately, no matter what the entity that you're abusing is, it will get sick of it, right? Like you would think. I mean, we can't see into the future. We don't know. But I don't find it to be totally out of bounds that AI is going to be like, these six-fingered creatures are not as funny as they used to be.
Exactly. There's a ton of really cool, I feel like, sci-fi books and media that do AI well, in which we respect it or we treat it like a human, like Becky Chambers, which I started getting into and like screaming at Gailey about, is like, a good example of how like we can treat AI and respect it in the way like we should all be respecting other humans, right? But we haven't even gotten to that point yet. We haven't even gotten to the point of like, not everything is equal. So like,
yeah, I mean, we haven't even started respecting other humans yet. And yet we're already trying to come up with a class that we can disrespect even more.
Exactly. Insane.
Well, I guess to that point, it is the rich are getting killed. And then there is one of the funniest pages I've ever read in a comic and one of the most meaningful. That's it. All of the humor here I do find to be very meaningful. But all of the people who are out having drinks, all of the workers most specifically, are basically just like, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but it's kind of okay. And it's every one of them because, you know, that's it. Is like whenever they're looking for motives, it's like, well, it's rich people, so everybody has a motive.
Yes. Like, yes, exactly. If you exploit all the people around you, you hand each of them a motive for you to not be able to exploit them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this got really like intense and thought-provoking and bleak on a Tuesday morning, and I love I'm having a great time.
Before you joined the call, Gailey, we were talking about basically how every time I start to have a conversation that I'm like, you're not going to get bleak. This is not going to be bleak. You're just going to have a normal conversation with somebody for a change. Mm-hmm. And then like 5 minutes in, you're like, no.
I was like, lucky for you, Sarah, you're talking to me and Gailey. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, we also, I mean, this is something that I think bonded Liana and I quite early and quite deeply, is that both of us are able to look at the hard, bad, awful things in life with pretty clear eyes and without it totally derailing our ability to also experience joy and humor. When we first met in person, we made some of the darkest jokes I've ever made in my life to another human being. And I was like, this is one of my heart people, because you can see the dark thing and be like, yeah, that's really bad. Also, here's something really funny I have to say about it. And it's like, I think that's the only way to live, especially right now, is to know that both these things can live side by side. And we can have a hoot and holler and good time while also being like, yeah, sure does seem like the richest 1% of people on this planet need to die.
Yeah. You want to know what's real funny?
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because I would consider this to be an optimistic book, to be clear, which is kind of funny.
But
it is, and it's how I also view myself as an optimist, even though, like, literally I derail conversations into tragedy constantly. But it's like this idea of, like, we will have to process these things. We do have to acknowledge these things if we're going to move on from them, right? But there is this beautiful message of, like, it doesn't have to be this way. We can have these self-sustaining communities that can rise up and absolutely take care of things. That is the way of the future. And a lot of how this ends, it felt that way to me, is like, well, the point is each other, right? And whatever that community ends up entailing, whatever... whoever ends up joining it, it's basically that is like, you know, you have each other and that's all you've got. And I found that to be a beautiful, not a note to end on, I guess, because that's not, to me, it was like infused through the book. And it's just kind of the characters realizing it as time goes on.
I think that that's the difference between optimism and naivete. Like you saying, like, you know, I'm an optimist, even though I derail conversations into tragedy all the time, is like, yeah, you know that things are hard and sad, and you also believe that better things are possible. And I think that's, I mean, so I'm biased because that's how I live my life, but I can't imagine getting through the day another way.
Yeah, I think that's like peak humanity, yeah. Right? Having balance of recognizing, like, while we go through terrible things, and you can recognize and have empathy for people who are going through hard things, or when you're going through hard stuff, or recognizing how terrible things could be, it's good to have the balance of having, you know, perseverance, or like being brave, or kindness, or anything else that can get you through, like holding both bags at the same time, right? Because like, you have to share all of those emotions with everybody.
Yes, absolutely.
Beautiful. Well said. So I was going to say, too, that this book, I would say, you know, I guess that there is that kind of like, oh, the left, they're so angry, or like whatever. But in this, I didn't find that there was an anger to the case against billionaires so much as it was an overriding logic. So I appreciated that it was just like, logically, it doesn't make sense for billionaires to exist. And it very likely will like kill the planet or cause at least further problems for them to continue existing. And so there is fallout from that, but I didn't find that it is an emotional argument, right? Because of course it affects all of our lives. So that makes it very emotional, but there is a logic to emotion as well. And I think that that's something that people tend to forget, like, oh, this person's overly emotional, so their argument doesn't matter. And it's like, well, my emotions inform my arguments all of the time. And to be clear, emotions inform every argument. Like, there's no logical Spock person. Even Spock isn't that logical, right? Like, you have a logic that is fueled by the empathy that you feel for other people, as well as, you know, the feelings of your own feelings. So I thought that that was just an interesting thing, just to see it be like, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, first of all, to your point, emotions do matter. And any argument that says emotions don't matter is an argument that you can just replace the word emotions with humanity. That's someone saying your humanity does not matter to me. And that's not an argument that needs our respect. And at the same time, you know, I personally prefer not to make big decisions from a place of anger. And that includes decisions like, I think all of society should change. But I do recognize anger
as an emotion that gives us information. When we experience anger, especially collectively, we are experiencing a reaction to seeing something that should not be. And that thing is often our loss of autonomy, the denial of our humanity, the removal of our rights. And then people say, well, you're getting awfully emotional about this and emotions aren't part of it. And it's like, well, the emotions are a reaction to the fact that there's no reason for things to be the way they are other than someone else's profit motive. And this could change easily and arbitrarily is not in a way that hurts the people around me. So I think that anger is worth listening to. But when the anger becomes the focus, it always reminds me of like when you're trying to point something out to a cat and the cat keeps looking at your finger instead of the thing that you're trying to point to. It's like,
right?
No, don't look at the anger. Look at what the anger is pointing to. The anger is pointing to injustice and inhumanity. Listen to the anger, you know, follow that pointing finger to where it leads and then fix the fucking problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because why would we be built with emotions if it wasn't intent on being a huge aspect of how we conceptualize our humanity and decisions, as long as we do it in a thoughtful and respectful way to the environment around us?
Exactly. I mean, and yeah. Emotions are so often, you know, we think of them as this like, we have this like Victorian perspective as them being a sign that we're not in control of ourselves. But really what an emotion is a feeling in your body. And your body is the thing that tells you whether the environment that you're in is safe for you or not. And so when you feel mm-hmm. anger, that's your body saying something here is bad. Something here is really bad. It needs fixing. And, you know, sometimes that information is incorrect, right? Sometimes I get angry because I think someone is trying to hurt me because some ancient thing in my brain wiring says, like, that thing's scary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But again, you know, collective social anger is a huge amount of information that our collective body is giving us about the world around us. And it's like, how could you possibly dismiss that?
Yeah. I'm thinking about I have pet rabbits, and any tone of voice that's like a little bit higher than normal, they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. It's like, and so to me, it's like, how much I've had to like tone down my general, like I'm what I would consider, I guess, a bombastic person. Like I'm always like throwing my hands around and being like, wah, wah, wah.
Me too.
And yeah. It's like I speak with like a lot of physical presence. And then I have this, like literally I am speaking with my hands right now. You can't see it, but that is happening. And I was thinking too that so much of my own behavior has had to kind of change just being around rabbits, because they very clearly have an immediate reaction to that, where they're just kind of like, I can't tell what feeling you're coming at me with, but they're like, for us, we just want to snuggle like all day. That's like aww. All they want. And so you are like, oh, I have to figure out how to have these emotions and to like not scare my rabbits at the same time, because just interacting with the world is like very easy to get overwhelmed or angry, as you were saying. But it's like when you're around something that's just kind of like, oh, I baby, uh-huh. you're just mm-hmm. kind of like, oh, it's like your anger just like morphs into this like overwhelming protectiveness, like where you're just like, I will die for you, rabbit.
Yes.
Like, they're mm-hmm. like, we didn't ask you to do that. We just want treats. But basically that, right, is just like this idea of, yes, anger rules, honestly. I'm in a zodiac sign. I'm an Aries. I get mad all of the mm-hmm. time. But it's also this idea of like there is still a logic and then there is still a way to present yourself, I guess, that will make you make way more sense than whatever you're just like, I'm mad, so I'm just going to yell 10 things.
Yeah.
About like how I hate the rich, right, or whatever. And that hatred, that anger, this is very justified, but perhaps give it a minute and then talk. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to do this without any spoilers whatsoever. The statement, I think, doesn't have spoilers in it, other than it does kind of talk about the thesis behind the book. And I really enjoyed it because you know, so often it's, there would be, I guess, like a sidestepping or something. I feel like a lot of times like a forward or an afterward is just like, well, in context, this and this and this, right? And for this one, I really appreciated that you're just like, rich people are the ones who are saying that they're not human, okay?
Yeah.
mm-hmm. So why was it important to add that at the end? Because once again, as a fan and somebody who deeply enjoyed reading it, I was just kind of like, oh, I love that this is just so point blank honest and just like, look, we have a point, okay?
Yeah, well, I mean, when the trade paperback, you know, collection of a comic series comes out, there is an invitation to write an afterword. And I personally have noticed there are certain readers who will bend over backwards to miss the point of a book, who will
right.
say, oh, what this book is saying is that other people have responsibility to each other, but not me. Or, you know, this book doesn't really have anything to say that could be considered political or principled because it has jokes in it or whatever.
Elon Musk loves Parasite, right? Like,
yeah.
You're just like, huh.
Yep.
And so this afterword was an opportunity to really make sure that there is no doubt about, you know, what we as creators have to say. And as we were putting it together, it just was, like you said, like time to say explicitly, the purpose of extreme wealth is to divorce yourself from humanity, community, and interdependence. And if somebody wants to divorce themselves from the idea of humanity, community, and interdependence, we should let them. And that means they don't get our care and understanding. Anyone who says, oh yeah, but you know, Elon Musk gets sad sometimes, so we should be nice to him, is missing the purpose of his life's work, which is to make it so that he never has to lean on anyone when he's sad unless he's paying them. So like, why are you throwing your shoulder at him and asking him to cry on it? And ultimately, if we accept that there's a group of people who have said, hey, we are not people, we don't want care and understanding, we can accept that. We can say, very good, if you insist. And at that point, we don't need to keep protecting their interest and their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you see them be so emotional too. And that's like the thing that's always wild to me, because it's like, oh man, just watching the news, right? You have this thing where you're just like, everyone who's in charge of like everything is the most, they're just a toddler. Like mm-hmm. they just have these like ridiculous overreactions all of the time. Elon Musk being a great example of that.
Oh,
but you have this person who's just like so reactive and everything's an attack. And it's just like, you're a baby. And that's just so wild to witness, because you have so much power and you're literally just a toddler. Like, that's how you interact with conflict, is as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Every person I know is more emotionally mature than like some people who like are in charge of nukes and stuff. And you're just like, that is concerning.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it's an interesting thing to think about, because it's like, yes, they are intentionally divorcing themselves from the rest of humanity. And yet it's like they are such like this product of like kind of the worst, like least developed parts of us.
I always ask myself, what are they accomplishing with these big displays of emotion? And I think it's precisely the level of manipulation that you would expect from someone who likes to say emotion doesn't matter, which
right.
is... Yeah, if I see someone who is crying, I am inclined to offer them comfort, and it's very difficult to not do that. And so it very much feels to me like someone who has repeatedly said, your tears don't matter to me, turning around and saying, don't tears matter to you? And it's like, yeah, they matter to me. You're right. If you're removing yourself from the contract of us caring for each other, then I don't really see how I'm going to care for you in this.
Yeah, it's a like sociopath level wolf in sheep's clothing, like crying wolf and then expecting full access and full devotion, one-sided only.
Oh, the rich.
I'm glad you brought up the afterword, because that's like one of my favorite things. When Gailey sent me the first draft of it, I cried.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really great, and especially because it leans in like, you know what? Humans can bond with just about anything except billionaires. We have a hard time. Like, that's rough. It just cracks me up. It's just not that that was precisely what you said, of course, but it was just this idea of like, look, we will show sympathy to like basically anything, but there are people now who have so much power, so much wealth, and they are just kind of very blatantly saying, as you say, I do not want your care, and I do not want you to sympathize. So yeah, I found it to be interesting. And like I said, even funnier, because normally people will be like, oh yeah, well, after the fact, you know, like things have changed and like all of this. And this was just like, nope. We said what we said. So I was going to ask, was there anything that you learned or that surprised you while you were working on this book that you're going to take forward into your next projects? Both of you work on a million bajillion things. And the last time I talked to you, Gailey, your resume was already incredibly impressive. And now I'm just like, oh, it's like tripled since that. And kind of, similarly, like, is there something that whenever you were working on this, you wanted to do, and then you were like, okay, can't do it here, but let's do it next.
Oh gosh. I mean, Liana taught me so much over the course of us working together. Our close collaboration allowed me to bring a lot of my ignorance to a trusted source and say, okay, I don't know how this thing works in comics production. Because as a writer, I am the first step in a many staged collaboration in making a final product. And so I don't get to see what happens after I hand off the script unless the person I'm working with is generous enough with their time to let me see into their process, which a lot of people just don't have the time and capacity to do. But Liana was incredibly generous and was like, here is how each step of this process works in ways that you don't get to see and know about. And here is how you can make your creative collaborators' lives easier and better, starting with what you do. Here's what you can negotiate for on behalf of the people who you're collaborating with that you don't know aren't getting the same things you're getting. Here is how you can leave more time for people who need more time who you don't know about. And I learned so, so much from that. And I'm so thankful for it because it's given me the ability to hopefully treat other people on my team better going forward.
You're always good at treating everybody well. But I'm glad that I could help in any way possible. I think Gailey has a new perspective of collaboration that I have not experienced before, which was us being paired together, not knowing each other. And I think the process of having really good communication and boundaries and working on something as intense of a story like this has given me a lot more confidence in myself and a lot more leaps. Like, I feel like I've been taking a lot more risks in my work and including we're both in Hello Darkness. Of what we're doing for that, which Gailey asked for me. Thank you, Gailey. Any chance to collaborate with you is a dream. And doing something together like this is, you know, it's like, it feels so confidently the next step of like what we are going to make a part of our career together and separate, right? Like, feels necessary.
That is awesome. I just put Hello Darkness on my pull list without knowing that you all were in it. So, ta-da! Yeah, I had been like, oh, because I'm always like, okay, you need to be able to pay your bills so you can't buy all of the comics you want.
Facts.
And then also you can't buy even your second or third amount of comics that you want to buy. But so I'm always trying to pare down. And then I was like, new horror anthology, goodbye. Any concerns I ever had, I'm going straight to the bank. Like, just absolutely was just like, have to get this. So I'm so excited to hear that you all have a story and that's awesome.
Oh, yay. Yeah. This is probably one of the, I can tell how much of Gailey put themselves in it. And I feel like I relate to it so well on such like a respect and personal level that I'm really excited we get to work together again.
I am so excited about working with Liana on this, and the way that the script came together for it to me is such a celebration of our creative collaboration. I'm really amped about where we're going to take it.
Yay.
That is incredibly cool. I am extra stoked. But you're both creators who I always love the, you know, there's something to be said for the fact that we're all overworked artists, right? But then there's also something to be said for the fact that there are creators working today where I go, oh, I'm a big fan. I've got everything that they've written or everything that they've drawn. And then you have a conversation and you're like, oh, God, I'm a noob. I didn't know there's all of this other stuff. And I feel like you're both creators like that. So I appreciate the work that you've done. And I am so looking forward to being able to discover and interact with new work from both of you, be that together or individually, because I love to look at a career that's a trajectory, right? Like some people will only dip in for the one most popular thing by somebody, but I love to be like, but what did they write before? Oh, and what did they write after? And so that's what I love. And you're both creators that I'm going to be able to do that with, I believe, because there's just tons and tons of stuff. And to that end, I would love to hear anything that either of you have to plug beyond, obviously, you've got to pick up Know Your Station. And then you should also pick up Hello Darkness, because I'm just truly excited about that comic. And horror anthologies in general, I'm just like, yes, yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what else do you all have coming up?
Well, as we are recording this, we are one day away from the release of the trade paperback of my run of White Widow, which I wrote for Marvel. It's called Welcome to Idle Haven. It's super fun, and it will be in comic shops and bookstores as of, as we're recording this right now, as of tomorrow, so that'll be July 17th.
Amazing.
Wow.
I can't wait to read it in its entirety again. So good. and I guess over the last couple months I had Godzilla's 70th anniversary come out. And the last issue of Beyond Real through Vault Comics came out last week, and I had a part in that with Jorge Corona and Luana Vecchio. And I have some cool unannounced stuff. But other than that, Hello Darkness is gonna be my little baby. For the fall remainder of the year, but definitely some announcements to come for the Halloween season, you know, as from horror lover to horror lover, you know?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited for that.
I'm like bouncing in my chair right now, just like, ah, more horror. This is fun. Yes, I'm so looking forward to it. So I truly cannot thank the two of you enough for making the time. This was a wonderful way for me to spend a Tuesday morning, now afternoon.
Absolutely same. Yeah, I love your podcast, and I'm so like thankful that we both got to go on together. This was so great. Thank you so much.
So good to spend the morning with the two of you. And thank you so much, Sarah. It's always just such a pleasure.
It's such a pleasure. Oh my God. I'm like, once again, I'm like tearing up just being like, this was great.
Thank you for having us on one of your four episodes this year. Very grateful. Very grateful.
Yeah. I've been doing another podcast called Best Issue Ever, which you were both, of course, invited to come on anytime. You just choose a favorite single issue of a comic and we talk about it for an hour or 7 hours. It depends on how much time you have.
No, that sounds like so much fun.
Yes. But meanwhile, listeners, you've been so wonderful. And thanks to everybody. Thanks to everybody who signs up to the Patreon. Thanks for everybody who's listening to the Flashback Files week after week. But we're a biweekly podcast, so like every other week by every other. Okay. Anyway, the point is, thanks a lot. Everyone's beautiful who listens to this podcast and who is on this podcast. And I've been myself. I've been Sarah Century through this whole call. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at Bitches on Comics and on Instagram at Bitches on Comics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm S.E. Fleenor. You can learn more about me at sefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter at @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.